Are you there?
Okay, I am back. I think this is going to work this time.
Hello?
Okay, thank you for your patience. I'm trying to get control of the board here so that I can mute the call. Just bear with me for just one moment here. Yay! Yay, it's working. We are going live. Can you believe it? We're having a little bit of technical challenge with the phone tonight. Last week, it was our bandwidth on our Ustream account. It is live and recording this evening. It's so exciting for those of you who are with us online. Thank you for being with us. We're going to invite everyone tonight to use text messaging as a way to be able to ask a question. If you please text 801-541-9181. 9181. That's 801-541-9181. And I'll be happy to do my best to address your question during our session. Just a couple of things for housekeeping tonight. Number one, due to some of the technical challenges we're having, our office staff is going through some training on a new system on Google. We will stay on this system next week. The following week is Christmas, the following week is New Year's. During that time, we'll get up to speed and train so that the first Tuesday night of January, we'll be on a phone line, conference line, and on Google Hangout. This is just a wonderful system. We're very excited to make this shift. It allows us to be able to make these video recordings more available to you on back-end and private videos on YouTube. Because Google and YouTube owned by the same company. So it's very exciting to be able to make that shift. We talked about it probably a couple of months ago and then realized that it's going to take a little while to make sure we're up to speed and it runs smoothly. We want these calls to be exceptional experiences for you, this Tuesday night celebration of life. And when we have technical challenges in the beginning, sometimes it's frustrating for everyone, including me. So glad we're all settled in and ready to go for this evening. I mentioned to you the Christmas break and the New Year's break. Also, for those of you who have purchased the new book, The Observer's Chair, it is going to be here tomorrow between 1 and 4. We are so excited that we're going to have copies to ship out. I'm going to be signing like a madman at late into the evening. I've got hundreds of books to sign. It's very exciting to get those off to you so that you can begin to get them to your friends and have them start to change your life. If you have not yet ordered The Observer's Chair, and you'd like to get some copies of it, or Today I Begin a New Life for Christmas presents, here's a little secret. I get online as soon as we get off this call and place an order, because before the night's out, everything is shifting from a pre-release, thank you, sweetheart, a pre-release order to just a standard order. The book's $19.95. Right now it's $16.95. That's a very exciting thing. So you can save 15% by picking it up before probably 10:30, 11 o'clock Mountain Time. So if you are wanting to buy some of those for the holiday gifts, jump on that quickly and take advantage of that discount, because tomorrow back up to the full price. And also, by doing that, we'll be able to get it out to you in the next 48 hours so that we can help you meet your Christmas deadline. We'd love to be able to give the gift of healing self-esteem to a lot of people this year. A lot of folks when Ramona and I get down to say our prayers at night, it's just pausing for a moment to reflecting on all of our friends who are going through really difficult challenges. We're not without our challenges, but when we are reflecting on theirs, it's very sad to see where a lot of people are. I got just the sweetest email today from a woman that I met several months ago when I was speaking, who last Saturday turned in the keys to her house. It was foreclosed on. About 62. A couple years ago, lost her husband. Cancer. That's tough. And she said, you know, I'm just so done. She said, I was borrowing your words, because that's how I felt. I was just so done. I was just done. And she was starting to find hope again. And that's our mission, is to help not just bring hope, because hope can be really hollow without substantive direction, so that we can take the steps to actually intentionally create a different outcome. We don't want just hope. But if we can get hope, we can start to ignite that fire and then introduce principles so people can start taking different actions. What a gift for us to give somebody this holiday season. So help us in getting this word out to the folks. And if you want to do that tonight, save a little bit of money, we'd be happy to take your order at that price. We just want to get this out into people's lives. Well, each Tuesday night, we talk about one of the qualities of an intentional creator. And tonight, we're talking about quality number three, physical creation. We've laid a foundation. We've talked about connection with people and the power of agape love, a heightened level of awareness, about taking our challenges and treating them just as experiences. We can't take them back, and lamenting them and wasting today, which is good, as Og says, throwing good after bad. I ruined today because of what I did 3 weeks ago. We don't want to do that. We want to take them out of our sack, put them in our hearts so that we can use them as a lens through which we can more clearly see what another person is experiencing. It's called empathy. No, excuse me, called empathy. Sorry, that was a great cucumber for lunch, dinner tonight, sweetheart. It's talking to me. We can use them as a lens to see what's happening to another person. And when we can see more clearly, we're more likely to ask more accurate, empathetic questions. We're safe. We create a safe place. Walls come down. Cooperation floods out. This is a good thing. Two, we start to use our mind constructively. This second quality, we know that creation occurs in two separate dimensions. And if we can understand this great principle that mental creation does not create the tangible vision. It doesn't take the house and make it manifest as brick and mortar. What it does is help us see it so clearly and to understand what it would take to actually create it, that ignites part of our brain that's normally dormant in every human being. It ignites our passion. So if we use our mind constructively to engage in mental rehearsal and inspiration, exploration, planning, goal setting, problem solving, if we use it that way, discipline, it's going to go somewhere. It's going to be involved in something during the day. I had a client this morning say, okay, I'm going to start allocating time to work on that. And I said, no. Before you allocate time to work on it, just allocate your think time. You might be doing the dishes. You might be doing the laundry. You might be taking the kids somewhere. If they're in the back yelling and screaming and you're just thinking, what are you thinking about? Give it that time on this issue you're working on. Give it that time. That's constructive thought. Because when our passion's ignited, we'll find the ways to make something happen. Conversation around, this is a writer I was working with, and the conversation was, Dave, how'd you get up at 4 o'clock and write every morning? And I said to her, and I turned to Ramona, we didn't have an alarm clock, did we? No alarm clock. You don't need an alarm clock to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning if you can't sleep fast enough. If you're so excited to get up and do something, you can't sleep fast enough. But you don't get to that space by have to get up at 4 o'clock. Set an alarm so I don't sleep in. No. This is about getting an idea, an impression, a solution to a challenge when we're using our mind constructively. And that ignites our passion. And the passion drives the focus and the discipline and the effort and the action. Now, that sounds very romantic. It doesn't mean we won't go, ugh, at 4 o'clock, even if we've got our passion ignited, because it's early, and we may have only slept a couple hours, and I get all of that. But it sure beats the alternative of being absolutely controlled and discouraged and frustrated. It's easy to go there. It's easy for me to go there. So we want to stay in this passion-driven place. That means we're going to want to use our mind constructively. Now, that's one way for us to drive this passion, the passion that's going to drive this second stage of creation. Now, let us understand this one. This second phase, physical creation, happens in this tangible reality. It doesn't happen in our mind. It happens in this tangible reality. And interestingly enough, we don't spend a lot of time here. Our bodies do, but our minds don't. So we're going to want to, as we go through this process tonight, learn some ways for our mind and our body to be wedded together so both of them are here. Because if our passion is ignited, and we're going to create that which we have seen in our mind, that's our mission. I saw that. Wow. I just can't hardly wait. I'm going to work without counting the cost or tracking the time. I'm going to do whatever is required to make this happen because that is what I want. This is an intentional creator speaking. I will do whatever is required. I'm not going to be in the day saying, wow, I'm really busy. Wow, I feel really good about myself because I'm really busy. So what? If we're not creating this, it doesn't matter. Are we taking this to the next level? This could be a relationship. This could be a business. Are we taking it to the next level? Can we see this? And are we willing to take the actions necessary to get the result? It's not the busy. It's the result. Our nation has lost sight of results-based actions. Just lost it. We've been working for the man, so to speak, where you go in and you put in your time and you go home. And often the man doesn't really care about you. You're just a number, an employee. They want to get the most they can out of you while they got you, and then they send you home. You go home to your life. We're going to want to shift this in our world. Oh, we want to shift this. I don't think we're going to have a financial recovery until we do. Where we start falling back in love with what we do. And those who manage human beings start seeing the value in the human being. And they see their mission as pulling the very best out of that person. And not repressing them or demeaning them or attempting to motivate them with fear, which is so popular, sad. This is a tragedy in our workplace, corporate America. It's a tragedy that that relationship has been developed. So many layers of management, so many systemic things in place. People climb up the ladder and pull up the ladder so no one can climb up and take their place. It becomes just dog eat dog. And I'm not exaggerating. Those of you out in the workplace, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I had that conversation with my sister at 5:45 tonight, where she works. Spot by a new corporation, came in. She lost 13 years of seniority, all of her vacation, all of her benefits, all of her overtime, which she's required to do now for free because they changed the designation of her employment so they can have her do all those things but not have to pay for them. She was in tears. This is a tragedy. I'm off on a soapbox. I don't mean to be. Let us just know that for this to occur, it must start with us. Let us be the one who does it, starts to live passion-driven in all that we do, and let us start to be the shining light on the hill. Let us become contagious. Let us have other people see the joy we experience when we are fully embracing our true self. Well, that's physical creation. Nobody gets to skip it. Nobody bad rap. There's no question. It's got a bad rap. Work is ennobling. When we're doing work, we are, and our hands are in touch with the dirt of the earth, if you will. If we're really connected, we feel whole and complete. We get to use our natural genius in the service of others. We get to act on our own moral authority. We get to be ourselves. Work is such a beautiful thing to do and to know how to do. So healing. So beneficial. We've got a nation that wants to get away from it, and sadly one that wants to help their kids avoid it because they don't want them to have to experience the pain they experienced as a youth. But yet their character was forged in that very process. Let's not rob our children, another little agenda. Let's not rob our children of the experience of knowing how to work, really work. Get down dirty and learn how to work. Let's not be so prideful that we don't want them working at Subway or driving an older car. Let us love them enough to let them start making good decisions and learning how to work hard so we can deliver them into the world prepared to be productive citizens. I'm going to tangent right now. I won't. Our cabin accidentally got rented to a fraternity while Ramon and I were in New Jersey helping the victims of Sandy and visiting with our family. Wow. Our children really need some guidance. They really need some guidance. Let us teach them how to work. If you have children at home, don't miss the opportunity. As much as they hate you, the greatest gift my father gave me was a healthy work ethic. Greatest gift. With that, you can do anything. You can have a PhD in psychology or a law degree, and if you don't have this, it doesn't matter. But you have this and don't have that, you can still survive. This is the number one thing in the workforce, a healthy work ethic, a results-based healthy work ethic. Because nobody gets to skip the work. Now, let's think about this for a moment. If in our mind we use our vivid visualization to escape into ease, you know, we want it to be easy and comfortable, and so we go into fantasy. We're either skipping past all the work. We just want it to be manifest. Well, nobody gets to skip the work. So in tangible reality, we're facing the fact that we now have to do the work. Have to. We want to be up there. We don't want to be here. So this becomes boring, mundane, repetitious, burdensome, hard. That is why work is hard. Because our vision isn't tied to the activity. It's tied to some event and beyond it. When we have a clear vision in our mind, what it is we want to create and the steps that it's going to take, and we're looking at the next step and say, this is it. It's not my favorite thing to do, but it's the next step, and that I really do want. And we've got our passion ignited. Now we can work without counting the cost or tracking the time. Same work. We just come to it with an entirely different energy. An energy that is boundless. Boundless when we're here. Oh, I can feel the difference so dramatically when the work that has to be done is have to, should, and must versus want to, get to, choose to. Oh, what a huge shift. What a huge shift. Now, I'm going to share something tonight we didn't share when you're in your coaching sessions. When we are looking at a task, we're looking at a dream. We have this dream, and we're looking at a task. Og says, I'm going to keep my eyes on the goal above my head. I'm going to ignore the obstacles at my feet. For where dry desert ends, green grass grows. That's true. We also want to keep our eye on that goal because when we see it clearly and we're here focused on doing the next millimeter, it ignites our passion, helps drive our actions. Here's the truth. There will be days when you'll face a task that in the moment, in the mental condition in which you're in, is harder than the passion of considering the possibilities. That passion will not be sufficient, as much as big as it is, clear as it is, it may not be enough to drive this action. You okay with that? What do we do then? If I got the dream, to ignite my passion, to drive my focus, discipline, effort, and action. I'm focusing on a task today, and I dislike it so much, or I'm so uncomfortable doing it, that even going to the future and seeing the possibility isn't enough to get me to do it. Anybody have a dream that fits this category? What would be a common one? One of the most common is dieting. Vision? Donut. Ramona's faking a cry. Donut. What we want to do when we're looking at this activity, I'm going to use a different one. Income. Cold calls. If you're in a profession where you must make cold calls, you must call prospective clients and develop relationships. What we're going to want to do is create passion around this activity. Not try to overcome the burden of it by looking into the future. We want to create passion around this singular activity. Okay? As we're creating this passion around this singular activity, it would look like this. I would go into mental rehearsal. I'm looking at this stack of cold leads that I'm going to call. I would go in to mentally rehearse this name, this person. I would begin to put skin and bones on them. I would ask, what could they be going through? What could be going on in their life? If your mission is worthy, I'm assuming that what you do is honest and integrous. It serves people. With that assumption, you can rest assured that if you ask, what can I create? How can I create that? How will I serve? If you will just be open to an impression, just let it go. Well, do I make this stuff up? I say, no, just let it happen. You know, when we used to fantasize about Ferraris, nobody had to tell you the color. Nobody had to tell you whether it had a hard top or soft top or tan interior, red or blue or green. Nobody had to tell you. Nobody had to explain how the street. Now, remember, the street turns right in one block. Now, be careful not to go off the cliff into the ocean by those rocks along the shore. Nobody has to say anything. Our desire to have the Ferrari is so great that it drives the vision. If our desire is to serve, to engage in life, connect, create value in somebody's life today. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. All those exercises we did in mental creation, we can start to think and we'll get an idea. Now I think in mental creation now, because just I've been doing it so long. So it's great to start to see in pictures. You see possibilities. Wow. Just trust what comes. Trust what comes. Don't hesitate. I don't hesitate anymore. I just trust what comes and act on it. I wrote in the new book that we act on it as if it's a sacred assignment. Sacred assignment. Because when we get an inspired idea about this mundane activity, it turns from cold calls to human beings. There's a stack of 50 human beings here. Each has a life, different circumstances, challenges, frustrations. Do any of them meet what I'm looking for? Any of them need what I have? My whole focus shifts. I get excited, get an idea, call, works, get inspired idea, act on it, proves to be true, we're close. And all of a sudden, 2 hours later, I've called everyone. I've had conversations with two or three of them. And things are in my life now that would have never been there had I not done it. And likely, if I had not done it, passion-driven. If I had shown up in fear and hesitation and doubt and confusion and overwhelm, been a disaster. And then I'm going to say to myself, why am I even doing this? Why did I agree to do this? Why am I trying to think I can, la, 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 la. That's where we go. But instead, we create something magnificent, and we do. We feel better about ourselves. We feel a sense of accomplishment. This is a powerful thing to do. So just know that in the physical, tangible world, there will be times when you'll face a task where the vision of possibility, where you're headed, will not give sufficient passion to do this activity in the moment. This won't be enough. So you take the activity itself and mentally rehearse it. Seek inspiration till ideas start coming. that part of your brain starts lighting up, and then you act on those things, and you have a wonderful creative experience. Everybody got this okay? This is such an important thing tonight. So we're working on passion-driven action. Now there's one other piece. I'll turn around and grab my Og book. This is an interesting piece. There are going to also be times when you don't feel passion and you're faced with a task. Og said something that was magical. It's in scroll number 9. It talks about the firefly. He says, henceforth, I'll remember the lesson of the firefly. And you can quote this with me. Many of you have studied this over and over. Who gives off its light only when it's on the wing, only when it's in action. Now, the symbolism in this sentence is enormous. The firefly is giving off light. Light is representative of intelligence, of knowledge, of inspiration, which means we only get the inspired ideas once we go into action. There will be times when we'll be waiting for the inspiration, and there may be times when we just need to jump in and just do. And as we do, that's when the doors of inspiration will begin to open. I can become a firefly, and even the day, my glow will be seen in spite of the sun. That's quite a lot of inspiration. Let others be as butterflies who preen their wings. This is someone sitting around waiting, who yet depend on the charity of a flower for life. I will be as the firefly, and my light will brighten the world. So there's the last piece. We get inspired ideas, ignite our passion, we work on them. We have a dream that ignites our passion, we work on it. We have a dream, but the task we're facing is too big. There's not enough passion to overcome it, so we mentally rehearse it itself to get an inspired idea. And if that doesn't work, we just take action. And as the firefly, we start to receive inspiration. Well, that's the doing of it. This is all about doing. As I said earlier, nobody gets to skip the work. And we don't want it to be boring and mundane and repetitious and burdensome. We want it to be passion-driven. And I just shared with you how to actually do that. Now, start to do this work. We're going to discover that most of the time, our mind is somewhere else, thinking about something. We're not present. I know this because I've asked over 3,500 people to do power sessions. I'll talk about them here in a moment. It's simply asking a person to be present 3 times a day for a week. I'm up to 10 now. We had 2 in one group. 10 people who actually did it. Wonderful miracles to get created in their lives when this happens. Now, all of you who have been through coaching, most of you, some of you are part of a group. I want to go through the power session because when we were doing it as a group, most did not actually get there. And that's okay because we're together for a whole year. We're going to go through power sessions a number of times. It's kind of fun, right? The plan is by the end of the year, you're starting to get this. You're starting to shift. You're starting to become more present in the now because the more present you are, the more you are available to actually do the work of creation, the more work gets done, the more gets created. So let's talk about these power sessions. This was born out of my challenge, my assessment. I have a hard time staying present now. I could spend all day somewhere else in my mind. I've got some great places I love to go. I know this is where creation occurs in 1993-ish. We're working on a new practicum, and I was working on this topic, and I got this impression. I'm sitting there reading scroll number 4 on about not bringing the workplace into your home because that dampens your love, or bring the family into the workplace because that will cloud your thoughts. They must remain divorced from one another, one of the paradoxes of the ages. And I was just reflecting on all that, and I said, I have a hard time being at home and not bringing the business home, or part being at work and thinking about the family. I just have a hard time separating those pieces. I'm always somewhere in my mind other than where I am. What can I do? What can I create? And the idea of power sessions came. I'm going to share them with you. Many of you know this, but just be with it this time, because this is not an idea. Oh, sure, it's a practice. But it's a practice to help us create a new way of living. Power sessions are really the way we're going to want to live. And this is how it works. When you first wake up in the morning, and it's when you first wake up, because this decision has to be made right away. Who's in charge today? My thoughts are me. My thoughts are me. And the very first thing we do is read scroll number 5. This is a great scroll. I will seal up its container of life, speaking of the day, and spill not a drop upon the sand. I waste not a moment mourning yesterday's aches of the heart, yesterday's defeats. For why should I throw good after bad? And he talks about the future. I'm not going to spend my time worrying about things I've got to do or things that might happen or trying to put tomorrow's gold in today's purse. I'm not going to fantasize. I'm not going to be overwhelmed by putting tomorrow's tasks in today's path. I'm not going to do those things. I'm going to stay present in the now. I'm not going to go in the past. I'm not going to go in the future. Powerful scroll. Every time I listen to it, I think that Og is no longer with us. Now, some people, when they read this scroll, they say, well, if this were the last day of my life, I wouldn't be here. I'd be someplace else. And that's true. And I'll stipulate to that. That's fine. I wouldn't either. But this isn't about us dying, although Og talks about that in the scroll. It's really about the day dying. The day dies. At midnight tonight, the 12th of December is, excuse me, 11th of December, jump ahead a day. The 11th of December is gone. Forever. We can't bring any of it back. It's gone. We don't want to be wasting part of our life. Now, we do need rest, and we need to relax, and we need to eat and sleep, all those things, yes. But we don't want to be wasting time. That'd be a deadly thing to do. So read scroll 5. Everybody got that? Just read scroll 5 first thing in the morning. Then you want to look at your day. What's the most important thing I have to do today? Which event should I be present? If it's your wife's anniversary, probably a good day to be present. If you got a meeting at work, maybe it's a family dinner. If it's a Christmas party. Fully present. Pick that one first. Okay, that's a power session. What that means is I'm bringing my power to that event. What does it mean, bring my power? It means that I am going to be fully present. I'm going to bring all of my life experiences, no longer in my sack, now in my heart. I'm going to listen. I'm going to ask empathetic questions. I'm going to create a safe place where walls come down. I'm going to create understanding. Very powerful experience. That's a power session. It's not a circus event. It's not bringing the, you know, donkeys and horses and elephants. It's not that. It's bringing you, all of you, mind and body wedded together in that moment and for a period of time, maybe an hour. Now, I'd like you to pick 3 of them. And if you've been doing this and it's been hard, push yourself a little bit. You don't want to push so hard that you're like me when I start a running program, and the first day I go out and run 4 miles, and the next day I can't get out of bed. That's what this can be like. If you push, you could do this for a week, but you don't want to do it at such a price that you never want to do another power session ever. But you do want to push yourself a little bit. You know, strain that muscle just a little bit. So you do 2 or 3 of them. Now that you know which ones you're going to do, now you get to start thinking about them. It's called mental rehearsal. What can I create? How can I create that? How would that serve? What could I do differently in that moment? What would that be? Get excited. Ignite your passion. Go execute. Create a miracle. Now, to assist you in that day, at midday, read scroll 9. I will act now. My dreams are worthless. My plans are dust. My goals are impossible. All are of no value. No value at all, unless they're followed by action. Only action determines my value in the marketplace. Increase my value, I must increase my actions. And that's not just for others, that's for myself. That's for me too. My value of myself. I increase my actions. Now, finish your power sessions. Spend a moment and journal. I've got my journal right here. For those of you who are online, I'll show it to you. Here's my journal. It goes with me everywhere I go. Here's a fun one. I read something the other day. Somebody shared this with me. I'm trying to remember who it was. I just love this. We beat out of our children that which comes so naturally so we can sell it back to them as self-improvement when they become adults. Now, that's not mine, but I thought it was clever. I get an idea. It's in there. You wanna write things down in your journal as they occur. It stays with me all day long. I write in clients' charts, but I also write inspired things in the journal. Then, just before you go to sleep, you want to read Scroll 7. I'll laugh at the world. Man's most comical when he can't laugh at himself. Oh, put everything into proper perspective. This too shall pass, and it will. It will pass. It doesn't feel like it. It hurts. It's painful, but it will pass. And the more you show up total and whole and complete, the quicker it'll pass. Well, that's a power session. Wake up, read Scroll 5. Pick the most important thing, and then the next three, if you can. Read Scroll 9 at noon. Journal when you're done. A power session is primarily what miracle did I create. And then read Scroll 7. Call it a night. Go to sleep. Sleep like a baby. Sleep like a baby. When you wake up in the morning, you just do it all over again. What you're saying is, I really want to intentionally create my life. I'm willing to pay the price to do so. Now, we'll see. We'll see. This is the most painful. This is the most painful moment in all of the intentional creation program and in your life. When it comes to self-improvement, the single most painful moment is when we face the reality that nobody gets to skip the work. The tangible reality, our dream, the real couch, let me restate that, the real bank account with real money that can buy a real couch, a real one, that is all here in tangible reality. And we come to the realization that we don't spend very much time here, the very place where things are created. That's a painful moment. It's also one of the most powerful, enlightening, wonderful moments you'll have. Because now you know. Don't give up. Be inspired by this. So I'm gonna slowly change this muscle, because I know when I change this muscle and I stay more present in the now, I will create more in this tangible reality. And by creating, magnificent things can happen. Let us make this decision to live present. So have fun with those power sessions. Last thing I want to share with you tonight. I talk about this primarily at the end of the book, because these are the three sections that are covered in the book, Today I Begin a New Life: connection, mental rehearsal, and power sessions. In the coaching program, as you know, we go deeper now into discipline and structure, joy in the journey, and self-esteem. But this is one of those important pieces. I want to take you back. I've been reflecting on this. I've told this story so many times from stage. I'm not going to tell you the whole story. I just want to take you to a moment in a story. Many of you know that I was in the care and keeping of a pedophile from age 3 through 5. In the first book, it said 2 through 4. My father wrote his life history. We've been editing, and it turned out 3 through 5. I was off by a year. Made more sense, 3 through 5. And we moved to Georgia, from Georgia to Alabama. And I was really reclusive, very private, very alone. And I decided to become an athlete. I wanted to play football. Be people bullied me, and I thought they'd stop if I played. And I mentioned in the book and other stories where I've told this on stage that I do not remember one thing from my ninth year football experience, ninth grade, not one thing. I don't remember the locker. I have a letterman's jacket. The letter, Westland Junior High School, is in Huntsville, Alabama, but I don't remember anything until spring football. When they asked if we wanted to keep playing, and I wanted to, and I remember getting bused over to the high school after school each day and dressing and playing, and I remember one moment in time. And I just want to introduce it to you tonight because it's such a key part of passion-driven action. It's the challenge of fear. Og says, my procrastination, which has held me back, is born of fear. That's false evidence appearing real. It's not rattlesnakes. It's just things I've made up in my mind. He says, I've learned that secret mind from the depths of all courageous hearts, core meaning blood, heart of hearts. What have I learned? That to conquer fear, I must act without hesitation. The flutters in my heart will vanish. That action reduces the lion of terror to an ant of equanimity. We know this. We have to take the action. Well, I still remember, and I could paint it. We were in white t-shirt kind of jerseys, white pants, white helmets. I had a big piece of medical tape across the front of my helmet that said Blanchard, written with a magic marker. And we're doing drills. And this was a drill where I'm supposed to pull as a guard and go down and block a defensive end who's coming across the line untouched, salivating, you know, protect the halfback that has the ball. Challenge was a drill because everybody knew what was happening. And I remember the moment, just the moment, when I faced my fear. I was so sick and tired of being afraid. That's why I didn't remember anything. I was so paralyzed with fear that I have no long-term or short-term memory of the ninth grade football season. It's bizarre. I sometimes joke, well, I won't go there tonight. I remember that moment. And there was this kind of a strange thing I attempted to write about in the book. And I want to say it to you tonight in a way perhaps that you'll hear this differently. Because there can be things happen in our life, and I talk about this in the observer's chair. The observer's chair is when we're being whole and complete, and there's that other chair over there that we sit in, the unhealthy habits of our thinking. But when we sit over there, there's a lot of things that can take us over there. We surrender our voice. Our voice is over here. We surrender our ability to make choices and wise decisions. Our thoughts speak for us, so they sound like us. And we can be carrying on a dialogue all day long that sounds like us, and it's not us, it's our thought processes, these unhealthy habits of thinking. This concept of being able to step back and sit in the observer's chair and hear these thoughts and shift them and change them, for some is a hard concept to understand because we're so attached to these unhealthy habits of thinking, that's who we think we are. And I remember this conflict going on in my head between the voice I had been hearing and what I could only call a distant voice way over there. Well, that day I discovered I didn't have language for it then. I do now. That was my voice over there in the observer's chair calling me. But I was so attached to these thought processes and this fear, and it was all first person. Sounded like me. I thought it was me. I thought it was me. I heard this other voice. And it grew louder and louder and louder. And I guess, lack of a better term, I decided to trust it. And it was as if I got up and walked over and sat in the observer's chair. And I felt something for the first time in my life. An empowerment. Oh, to be free of that noise. I got to meet me. Really, me. For the first time. I've been robbed of that experience at a young age. Got to feel me. Now, I've joked about doing the drill and feeling like I was 6'5 and 275, and I spun when I went down the line. I did. I knocked the defensive end on his buttocks, and coach is cheering and yelling and screaming and had me do it again, and guy was better prepared the second time. I still got the block. I came alive. Came alive. And I said something in there that it's less dangerous to play life full speed. You can really get hurt holding back, being fearful, timid, shy. There's a voice in you. You've heard it. It might just be a whisper, but you've heard it. You know this voice. You think it's someone else. You might think it's God speaking to you. But your voice and his, sometimes your real voice and his, you're being invited to let go of resistance and rebellion and anger, hurt, resentment. Those voices aren't that different in their messaging. Tonight, see if you can hear that other voice, your real voice. See if you can hear it. And flip the switch. Now, I know there's had to be some times that I've had some fear since then. But it's been nominal. When that switch got flipped and I got to feel what it was like to spend time with me, it takes a lot to rattle that. It's time for us to embrace our true self. Embrace our clay. Our voice. Because you see, when we take what we have and we create the most we can with it, we're given more. That's when people get put on our path who can serve us and who we can serve them. That's what the magic begins to unfold, if you will. What I just described to you is one of the ways we speed up creation. People want to skip the work of creation and just have it manifest, believing that's the fastest way. That doesn't happen. They end up being broke, broken, and angry. The fastest way to creation. Focus on an idea, get an inspired idea, ignite your passion, take the action, and in this process, hear this voice, the real voice. Embrace the real voice. When we're in action, fully engaged, we get to meet our genius. You know you've done this. I've talked with you many times. We procrastinate, we put off, we finally reach a deadline, we have no option, we jump in, and we must always say, why'd it take so long? Wow, that wasn't as hard. We're surprised. And all that happened is we finally shut off the noise of the unhealthy habit of thinking, and we embraced our true voice. Embraced our true voice. Even we were surprised what happened. It's time to stop being surprised. It's time to stop being imprisoned by these unhealthy habits of thinking. It's time to stop living in fear. It's time to embrace your goodness. Let go of rebellion and resistance and resentment and create the most you can. This will allow for miracles to unfold. The very miracles you desire to have in your life. This, again, is what speeds up creation. This is the miracle. So engage in this. Now, next week, we're going to take on discipline and structure. If you happen to have a copy of Today I Begin a New Life, go to Mental Creation, the first chapter, The Attic, The House of Horrors, and read that. If you don't have that, begin reading the opening section in your IC studio, Intentional Creation Studio. Go to quality number 4, discipline and structure. Start listening to your affirmations. Those are great affirmations for discipline and structure about being disciplined and teachable and analytical. So we use those powers appropriately. We'll spend time next week on a little bit of the assessment. This will be an opportunity for us to let go of the need to be right, find good in other people's ideas, start letting go of systemic thoughts and using them constructively. And then we'll move into joy in the journey and then ultimately self-esteem, and we'll start all over again. Each time a little different. When I come to these events, these evenings, Tuesday evenings, I come seeking, what can I create? How can I create that? How will that serve? And it is my hope that there's been something said tonight that maybe has answered a question for you, or had you consider something just a little differently, so that you'll take courage to overcome fear and have the courage to begin living present in the now, willingly and excitedly doing the work of creation. May you do so. May you have a great week. It's great to be with you. What a great season. We'll be back with you next Tuesday night. Same time, same station, same Ustream. And we'll take on discipline and structure. Thanks, everyone. And good night.